about what happened that night. No, I did not have anything to do with George's death.
Okay.
And definitely no, nothing dealing with him, wanting him dead for money. Nothing. At all.
This is Tia Young, the prime suspect in the murder of her own husband, George Young. But detectives suspect that she wasn't alone, because hidden behind her acts of denial is a complex love triangle and the race for $1 million.
He said you guys were in a relationship and that you were the mastermind behind all of this, and it was your idea because you wanted the $1 million life insurance policy, and he could take over George's job, and you guys would be set to be together. And that was the whole deal.
Well, I can tell you that's a lie.
On November 16, 2017, at 11:30 p.m., 43-year-old George Young returned to his home after working late into the night as a security guard for rapper Lil Yachty. Considering the safety risk of his job, George had made sure that he wasn't being followed that night, but he did not expect that someone would be waiting for him inside his own home. Because the moment he unlocked his door, the only thing George heard was a gunshot. He had been shot directly in the face, giving him little to no chance of survival. The first individuals to respond were George's wife, Tia, and oddly enough, another male living at the residence, Tim Lee. By the time the officers arrived, Tim was attempting chest compressions on the victim, George, while Tia stood and watched. Investigating the crime scene, officers soon discovered a string of inconsistencies that would lead them to a murder case filled with conspiracies and lies. The first of these inconsistencies was an incredibly weird request that Tia made to dispatch.
Begged when I called 911, I begged them not to turn sirens on because I didn't want my kids to see him like that.
The cops obviously could not do this and had to turn their sirens on. But by the time officers arrived, they discovered the children still slept through not only the loud sirens, but the gunshots as well. Questioning the children, officers soon discovered that they didn't simply fall asleep. They had been forced to stay asleep, as they were fed sleeping pills by Tia before they went to bed. Even stranger was a neighbor who gave an interview to officers, explaining that he saw Tim Lee initially running away from the dead body towards George's car. Officers later found out that a tracker had been removed from the car. But the most important discovery wasn't a clue from the crime scene, but a $1 million insurance policy that George had. And the beneficiary was none other than his own wife, Tia. At this point, officers had more questions than answers. Why did Tia feed the children sleeping pills? Why did Tim remove a tracker with a dead man in front of him? And most importantly, what was the relationship between Tim and Tia? To find answers to this, officers dug deeper into any communication between the two. This is when they found emails and texts filled with sexual messages. Tia was having an affair, and Tim was her secret lover. Officers finally had a lead, and a few months later, the two were called in for an interview. But before they can talk to Tia, the primary suspect, they need as much evidence against her as possible. This is why they first call in Tim and confront him directly about his secret relationship. The footage you are about to see was provided to us by the Gwinnett County Sheriff's Office.
So one of the things was, obviously, I talked to you before, and a lot of people had some concerns. What was your relationship with Tia? I know that you guys say it's a brother-sister relationship. I know that in the phone it said big sis, and you had said that that's what it was going to say inside the phone. That's how you had her saved. What is the relationship in your eyes, and what was it before? Has it changed at all through any of this?
I mean, She's still my big sister.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what, I always look out for her. If you ask her mom, she'll tell you the same thing.
I talked to her mom, and that's what she said. My question too is, in your phone, you have her saved as big sis. In her phone, she has you listed as a female's name for both of your numbers. You know why that is?
Hmm. I mean, I never went through her phone.
So this is her phone, and these are your numbers saved under this female name. And then that's the black phone you had, and then the IPH is the iPhone.
Well,
so why does she?
Sonya is my sister.
Mm-hmm. Does she? Your sister had both your numbers?
No, I'm talking about my big sister, mm-hmm. my real sister. Her yeah. first name is Sonya.
Okay.
So I don't know why she has.
But why would she save you and her phone as that? If you guys are so close, why would she feel like she has to hide it?
I don't know. I don't go through her phone.
Okay. I mean, I'm just curious. I mean, was she worried that George, did you guys talk a lot that George didn't know about, that she was going to, she thought he was going to be upset?
We always talked in front of George. So, I mean, it was, wouldn't just be several of her coworkers, but like she said, and if you'd ask her mom, her mom would tell you the same thing, that mm-hmm. the boys. Like, we could be in the room, matter of fact, and I know Ivy brought it up that night, but we can be in the room listening to music, watching mm-hmm. movies. George would come home, he'd go get the computer chair, pull it right in the room, and we'd all just sit and watch the same movie. Because they didn't have a TV in their bedroom. So. Mm-hmm. The only two TVs in the house upstairs is mine and the mother's, Tia's mother. So.
Okay.
Tim is completely unwilling to crack. However, detectives have just the thing to soften him up and get more answers out of him.
So obviously when, you know, we talk to everybody that we feel like has any kind of past or talking to anybody. So obviously I talked to Zena. And when I talked to her, she said that you had told her you were dating somebody named Tia. And that you said, you told her it was a school teacher, but that when she called her, it was Tia's phone, and Tia answered while she was during Valentine's Day with George. Mm-hmm. Do you know about that? Mm-hmm. You don't remember that? Mm-hmm. She sent you an email talking about it. Did you read her emails?
I rarely read Zena's emails because she trash talks so much.
Okay.
Half of them get deleted, honestly.
Okay. All right. Yeah, she said every time she asked you or she confronted you about somebody, you changed which Tia it was. Okay. Why would you tell her you're dating a person named Tia?
She actually called a Tia from, what school did she say? Cedar Grove. And then she said that that one to Tia, so she reached out to several Tias.
Okay. But you had told her you were dating a Tia?
No, I didn't.
So why would she come up with that?
I have no idea.
You think that's weird? That you live with a Tia and she thinks you're dating a Tia?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
She sent several texts saying that she talked to the Tia, which was a coach from a coach, math teacher from Cedar Grove. And then she said that she called two other Tias trying to find who I was quote unquote dating.
Okay.
But I hadn't been dating for a good minute because I tried to work it out with her and it didn't work, so.
Okay.
She got upset.
All right. So she said, and the email that she sent, that was in May of last year. There's also an email that Tia sent you that where she's talking about everybody at work hated her, and when she said her reputation was ruined, she's a homewrecker, and everybody's talking about her at work, and that she's like, what did I do to deserve all this? You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
You do? What was that about?
Zena thought it was Tia, and she started harassing.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tia says this was coming from work. Like, the people with Tia was working with at Emory were calling her a homewrecker.
From what Zena said, she said that she found another Tia that worked at the hospital.
Okay.
But she had reached out to several Tias, so she said that she was going to call every Tia she could.
All right. So Tia reached out to you a lot to talk?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, like I said, when I remember that we had your phones before, I told you we can get everything that's deleted, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in that, obviously I have those emails. I have all those emails that Tia had sent you, okay? And in those emails, she talks about yours and hers relationship and talks about how good you are sexually.
From Tia?
Mm-hmm. So that's obviously my issue here is that everything shows that you guys were having some kind of relationship. So I just want you to tell me why. And I know, you know, these were sent to you and you read them because it shows us whether you opened it or not.
For a minute after this, Tim goes into a state of pure shock as he continues to read his conversations with Tia. If you look close enough, you can almost see his soul leaving his body. Unfortunately, what he says next brings this interview to a screeching halt.
So tell me, why are you lying about it?
I like to exercise my right to plead the fifth.
Okay. Do you want to continue this conversation? Or you just don't want to talk about this?
If I can go, or if I can contact my own attorney.
Okay.
At this point.
Do you have an attorney?
No.
Okay. All right. All right, let me talk to her right quick, and then I'll work on that, okay?
By pleading the fifth, Tim invoked his right to have an attorney present. But that doesn't matter anymore, as officers have determined that Tia and Tim's relationship was far more than platonic. Now with the evidence stacked against Tia, they call her in for an interview. If they can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that she was complicit in the murder, both she and Tim will be living the rest of their lives behind bars.
Hey, wait.
Yeah.
It's cold in this one.
It is.
It's burning up down there. So, like I said, the reason I brought you back in here today is I have follow-up questions. I kind of want to go over it again because it's just at the point that we're at now. That's been a couple months. Sometimes bringing people back in and going over the story helps us find if there was something you didn't remember the first time. The thing is, with it, the first time we talked and then you came up here and then we talked to you at the house, and I understand that there were some issues with that. It had gotten pretty confrontational, and I guess the way that some people had talked to you, right? At the house?
Yes, very.
Okay. One of the things is that when we bring people in over and over, obviously I know that because of the things we were going, because of the suspected relationship between you and him, because of all of those things, you were listed, you know, as a suspect, but you knew that, right?
I found out through, yeah.
Okay. You found out through where?
Mutual Omaha. They sent me.
Oh,
they sent
okay.
me a letter every month.
Oh, okay. So because of that, like I said, I want to go over this with you again today and ask you this, but because we've already kind of come at you hard and talked to you and all that kind of stuff, and I just did the same thing with Tim in there, I have to talk to you, is that I'm going to have to read you your rights, okay? You know, I don't have a warrant for you right now or anything like that, but to continue talking, because it's the fourth time I've talked to you, I have to read it to you, okay?
Okay.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can will be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to talk to a lawyer and have him present with you while you're being questioned. If you cannot afford to hire a lawyer, one will be appointed to represent you before any questioning if you wish. If you decide at any time to exercise these rights and not answer any questions or make any statements, or you can decide at any time to exercise these rights and not answer any questions or make any statement. Does that make sense? You understand that?
Yes.
Okay. You sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I was talking to him and he said that you still hadn't found a job, right? Okay. How's that been?
I just not got any calls.
Okay.
For anything.
Are you just applying for like medical positions or?
Mostly doctor's office and hospital.
Okay.
I've had a few coworkers trying to help me get on at their facility, but the fact that I was terminated in September, that doesn't help
mm-hmm.
when they go check a reference.
Okay. Did they not give you the option to resign, or did they terminate you before you ever
go? No, I wouldn't even. They terminated me on my day off.
Oh, yeah.
By phone?
They called you or they texted you?
They called me.
I was about to say, if they text you, that's pretty. How are the kids doing?
My older two are doing fine. They seem to kind of go on through life like nothing has ever happened. They don't talk to me much about it. Mm-hmm. I have to try to talk to them, and it's like pulling teeth. Mm-hmm. They told me a few weeks ago it's just easier for them to act like nothing ever happened. Mm-hmm. My oldest one doesn't even like to see mail or anything with George's name on it. Mm-hmm. He's asked me to please keep stuff out of sight range. It doesn't bother my middle one to see stuff, but mm-hmm. it does really bother the oldest one. The baby boy is having the hardest time. And mm-hmm. I don't know if it's because of his age or what, mm-hmm. but me and him are grieving, I think, the hardest. The older okay. two seem to just... My oldest one is in school, plays sports, works. So he's hardly ever home. He tries to stay extremely busy. Mm-hmm. So I guess he says when he's sitting idle, that's when his mind just kind of goes all over the place.
Okay. And the oldest one, is that Dylan? Mm-hmm. And is he working?
Yeah.
Okay.
Food Court Mall, Georgia.
Okay. Which restaurant is he working at?
Charlie's Cheesesteaks.
Charlie's Cheesesteaks. I don't think I've ever been there. Mm. Yeah. How's your mom doing?
She has her good weeks and bad. The first couple of months was awful for her. Mm-hmm. Now she has about 2 or 3 bad days a week.
Okay.
But she tries to be strong. Mm-hmm. I guess that's what moms do. That's yeah. what I've been trying to do for mine.
Yeah. Has the car situation gotten any better, or using your mom's? I know you had several cars and there was problems with most of them. Is that kind of?
Yeah, the Lincoln, the engine light's been on. Mm-hmm. It's broke down several times. The BMW is what my son drives. It's been in the shop mm-hmm. at least twice in the past couple of months.
Okay. And your mom still drives her car?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does Tim still have the, is it Titan?
Yeah.
Okay. So what I want to do today is just kind of walk back through what you can remember. Sometimes over time people remember things that they didn't remember the first time. I'll help kind of jog your memories with go of things that you told me. Maybe you'll tell me something you didn't remember the first time, okay? So just start out that night. I know that you said you had gone or you were in bed. Were you like in a deep sleep or were you just kind of sleeping or what was going on?
As far as I remember, I was in a deep sleep.
Okay. And then what happened?
I heard 2 loud noises. I wasn't sure if it was firecrackers or what it was. Mm-hmm. I sat up on my bed, looked around. My baby boy was still asleep. If I remember correct, I think I went to Tim's room, but he wasn't there. His light was on. Mm-hmm. Then I remembered he was downstairs on a computer or a laptop mm-hmm. at the table. I don't think I went to my mom's room right away. I think I went downstairs to where he was. And I think as I got almost down to the bottom step, he was coming up. Mm-hmm. He asked me, did I hear it? I said, yeah, I heard it. He said, it sounded like shots. I said, I'm not sure if it was shots or firecrackers or what it was, because mm-hmm. some people in our neighborhood that I knew, they periodically do firecrackers for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. I think at that point he said he was going to go get his gun, mm-hmm. go up to his room, go down and check, see. I remember him opening the door, shutting it pretty quick, mm-hmm. telling me to call 911.
Mm-hmm. And that's when he told you that it was that George was out there. Okay.
And I called 911. The lady goes through the whole thing. What's your emergency? Mm-hmm. And then I told her that my husband was, well, we heard gunshots, and my brother opened the door and said that it was my husband. She okay. needed to know, I think, where the shots were is what she needed to know. And yeah, that's the first thing she asked. I told her I couldn't do it. I couldn't go down there. So she said, is there anybody can look that can? I said, my brother. So he looked, told mm-hmm. me what he thought he saw. So I related to her. Then she wanted me to do CPR. Mm-hmm. I don't know CPR, first of all. And if I did, I don't think I'd have been able to gather myself to do it. I don't know. I could have, but I don't think so.
It's important to note that Tia did have experience in the medical field, as she mentioned earlier that she was actively applying to medical positions. This meant it was impossible that she did not know CPR and was clearly lying. Unfortunately, this is only the start of her disgusting lies, because as she begins to talk about the murder, her behavior is anything but that of a grieving widow.
Okay. So she asked me, is there anybody that could? I asked Tim, could he do it? He said, yeah. At some point, I remember throwing my phone down so mm-hmm. he could talk to the operator. At some point, I went and got my mom. She wasn't asleep. I thought she mm-hmm. was. She was in a room with the TV up loud.
Okay. So you were sleeping, you heard these shots, you come down, Tim's sitting at the table, you ask him if he heard that, he's like, yeah, he heard that. Did he go check out the door first, or did he go get his gun first?
If I remember right, I thought he went upstairs to get his gun first, but I didn't actually watch him go in there and get it.
Okay.
I think I remember him going up the steps, heading to his room, but I can't swear to it.
Okay, and you were on the platform?
Catwalk.
Oh, you were upstairs? On the catwalk thing?
By the time he went down to check on George, that's where I was standing.
So, he goes outside, he opens the door, he sees it's George, and I know at some point he put his gun up. When did he do that?
I don't know if it was after emergency people got, I don't know. I really can't be honest. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure.
Okay. So he goes outside. At some point he puts his gun up. He sees George and he tells you, it's George and whatnot. And then is that when he tells you to call 911, or did you ever go down to the door or no?
No. I never went to the door.
Okay.
I stood up at the top where you could see over the thing.
Okay.
All I could see was like his feet and legs on the door.
Okay.
It's unclear whether George was shot from inside or outside the home. However, considering that the only firearm in the area belonged to Tim and that George's legs were facing the inside of the house, it's likely that the gun was fired from the inside as he fell backward, presumably by Tim, as both he and Tia admit to the presence of this weapon. Additionally, if we take into account the time it would have taken for all of this to happen, it doesn't make sense. This is because one of the neighbors clearly witnessed Tim going to the car and removing a tracker after the gunshots. The most logical explanation is that Tim had been tracking him for ages using this, and once he killed George so Tia could get the insurance, he rushed to get rid of it. This is why officers are about to question her regarding this, as they need an answer for Tim's odd movements and his intentions.
So, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, obviously, is I've talked to Tim, and one of the things that, you know, I'll just be honest with you in the beginning, issues with him is, you know, we had talked to you, and you had told us what you had told us, and there was, you know, I won't say there was much to that, but Tim just seemed, you know, there was a lot more confrontation going on with him during the first interview and talking to him the day that you guys came up there because of that whole tracker thing, which you said you didn't know.
George came to me about it, but like I said, I never knew it was actually purchased and the whole nine. But
okay, so did you know the night that happened before whatever was going on with you and Tim that he had gone and retrieved that off the car?
No, not until you told me.
Okay,
I think it was at my house here on the 18th.
But what do you think about that? I mean, why?
Well, when you said it, I was floored because, like I said, first of all, I didn't even realize the tracker was ever purchased. Mm-hmm. And then when you told me that a neighbor or somebody saw him take it off, I found it really strange, and I even asked him about it later.
And what did he say?
I didn't ask him about it that night. He said with what George had going on or whatever about, remember when I told you the guy who came down? He said he just didn't want, I guess, George, I think he said he just didn't want George being exposed in a bad light or something like, I don't know, something like that. But I haven't asked him anything about it since.
Did you feel like that was, and I just want your opinion on it, because I'll tell you how it looks to us. Do you think that was weird that in the moment that his friend is laying out on the front porch bleeding out, his first thought is to go to the car and pull that off instead of rendering aid to George?
Yeah, I found that weird. And that was before he did CPR?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I found that strange.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously I do. That's why I don't know. Yeah, we asked him, and he admitted that he went and did it, and he didn't have a good answer. He didn't really have an answer as to why. He said he didn't want you to find it or the family to find it, and they would know, but I said it's under the car. Who's going to look under the car? That's weird.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But let me just ask you, do you think that have you ever felt that he was may have been involved in this in any way?
I don't. I mean, I know that part of it doesn't add up at all. But I personally, the only reason I just never seen any beef between the two of them at the house. Mm-hmm. I've never heard George, and me and George had a really good relationship as far as he would tell me about stuff that went on, or he got into it with somebody, Ackerman, or it, whatever. Mm-hmm. But he never mentioned to me ever that they had a beef, disagreement. Like I said, even Tim had went to him several times about, you know, I can go ahead and leave now. You gave me 6 months. Mm-hmm. You know, you told me I'm 6 months. George came to me. You want him to go? Are you cool with it? I mean, it's a help to us because he's paying rent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then at the end of the year, he came to George again. Do you want me to go? And George came to me and was like, what do you think? Because I'm cool with him being here. I go. out of town so much, I feel better with him. So it's like I never, George never let on that ever that he had a beef or was threatened or scared of him, or I just never witnessed anything. And the kids haven't, and as far as I know, my mom has it. So I just, that part doesn't make sense.
Do you think he was jealous over the position that he wasn't making as much money as George?
I don't think it was that, because he was making good. Like, George started, I think, at 23 an hour, I think. I think it was 23, and his first raise was up to like 26. So I don't think it was that. And I know there's been several times George couldn't make payroll, and he had to go to David and Tim, and can I give you half or $1,000, and I pay you the rest. And they've always said yes, every time. Never know. He's never come back and told me, oh my God, Tim is hot, or David is pissed. And then he's borrowed money from Tim before. And Tim told him, pay me back when you can. He's fixed my car several times, because George didn't have the money, neither did I. And he just told George, pay me when you can. It's fine. And to my knowledge, George has paid him back every time.
Okay.
Now, I know this last time, I think the last time I got it fixed was in October. That was a transmission. I think it was like over $2,300. I don't think we finished that debt off yet. I think we gave him maybe 13 of it. But George was in the process between the two of us paying it back.
Okay.
But that's the only part. If I had something to go on,
I've
seen, it's just nothing.
Okay.
From what Tia claims, it's almost as if the relationship between her, Tim, and George was perfect. There were no disputes, and everyone was happy. But the $1 million insurance was likely something that Tia and Tim were eyeing for ages. This was something that was corroborated by David, Tim's best friend, who stated the two were planning to kill George and take the money. This is something that officers are about to confront her with.
Okay, so after talking to him, and I've talked to David multiple times, and then I talked to Tim again today, okay? I tell you right now, I have a whole lot of stuff that points to Tim had something to do with it, okay? And I know him and David were good friends and some stuff was going on. I went over there and just talked to him now, and obviously you guys knew you were coming up here and I wanted to follow up with him, but that's because I knew I was gonna talk to him about the stuff that I had found, okay? I'll say that conversation went pretty quickly, okay? There's not a whole lot that he was gonna be able to deny, okay? So I'm telling you that the investigation shows that he had something to do with it. The interesting part, though, is that he implicated you in it. He said you guys were in a relationship and that you were the mastermind behind all of this, and it was your idea because you wanted the $1 million life insurance policy, and he could take over George's job, and you guys would be set to be together. And that was the whole deal.
Well, I can tell you that's a lie. That's a lie.
So I want to hear from you the truth and what was really going on, because if that's what he's telling me, and I already know he's involved, you see how that makes it look?
Yeah, but that's bullshit. I can tell you that's bullshit.
Okay, well, tell me why.
First of all, like I said, I don't know that he's involved. I don't know anything about what happened that night. Nothing.
Well, listen,
I didn't even know the policy was any good until me and Rob called a couple days later.
Okay.
So, first of all, I'm used to struggling. Me and George have struggled our entire marriage financially. I would never hurt or take anybody's life for no money. And like I said, first of all, I know at one point George had $1 million, a $450, and then I had a $250 on me. I knew he had at some point dropped mine. I didn't know he dropped the $450 until me and Rob started our calls and found out one was no good and the other one was. But him taking over the business, I know nothing about that.
Okay.
That was never a discussion we had.
One of the things that Ivy said was you told her that there was the $1 million policy way earlier last year.
Who?
Ivy.
Me and Ivy have never discussed an insurance policy, never. Now, George told me at some point that Ivy knew about it. Him and Ivy were very close, and she used to work for George remotely from Myrtle Beach. She could log on and do work for him. So at one point, I don't know, I think it was a couple years ago, he said that an email that I guess the insurance company sent him, Ivy saw it. Or I don't know, I think she could access his massive email. And so he told me, he said, now Ivy knows about the insurance, you know, policies that we have. But me and Ivy would have always been close. I was closer to her than any of the other ones. So even when he mentioned to me that she knew about it, I was cool with it. I mean, that's fine. We were close, so I didn't care that she knew. But like I said, I knew he had a policy, but I didn't know it was active, because I knew he had dropped one, I don't know, earlier last year. So I didn't know if any of them were any good. I didn't.
Okay.
So no conversation ever went on about no insurance, him taking over no business, or none of that's bullshit.
Okay.
I don't even know why he'd say that, because that never happened.
I guess, obviously the concern is, I'm telling you, the thing with him is he got the tracker. He got it. He had tried to put some apps on George's phone before then, and he said George knew about those. I know for a fact George didn't know, because I have his text messages where he explained to George that it was Zena, that Zena was trying to do that to him. But I know for a fact they only were signed up through his phone, because I could tell that he did that. So he was trying to find ways to track George, and George didn't know it, which is why I have a hard time believing about him knowing that the tracker was going to be on the car, because he didn't know about the other stuff on the phone. Because why would you explain to him Zena did it and explain it away if he knew that's what you were trying to do? You would just tell him, this is what I'm doing. Because when he downloaded those apps, mm-hmm. it sends a notification to the person you're trying to track. So George was like, why am I getting this notification? You're trying to track my phone. And he said, oh, well, Zena's been trying to track me, which is not true.
Okay, yeah, this is new to me.
Also, he was looking at that app for the tracker, which in his words is only supposed to be in case something was going to happen to him, to find the truck, not him, which is weird that you're only worried about the car and not him. And he was looking at it from the day that he bought it on the 6th, he was looking at it every single night. And he was looking at it the night before George came home.
You saw the night of the 16th?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so the tracker sends a message to his phone? I mean, I'm confused.
Okay, so a couple days prior to the murder, earlier in the month of November, he tried to download these apps on your phone, just like an iPhone app or a Samsung Android, I'm not sure how that one works, where you can track somebody's phone. Well, when you do that, you're not allowed to do that without their permission. So when you put in that person's number that you want to track, it sends them a notification. I have it on George's phone where he got the notification and then asked,
okay,
Tim, why am I getting this? And he said, oh, Zena's trying to track me because of stuff going on with her. Don't worry about it. I'm sorry about it. But I know for a fact he signed up for it, because it came to his email through his phone number that he signed up for it. He has to download the app on the phone. So you see what I'm saying? So George didn't know he was trying to track him. Otherwise, he would have been like, hey, I'm tracking you because we talked about this before. Remember?
Oh, okay. I see.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Then he got that actual tracker and was using it, the one he put on the car.
Okay.
He was looking at that one on his phone.
Okay.
We had the app, and I can show every time he opened it, every single night from the night that he bought it up until the night of the murder. And he was looking at it the night of the murder before George got home. So he knew when George was going to be home because he was watching him on the map.
Okay, so
And before
so
that,
did somebody do it?
That's what I'm asking you.
Hell, I don't know. I have
before
no idea.
Before that, he was researching all kinds of poisonous things online. He researched black mamba venom, which is the most venomous snake in the world. You cannot buy their venom online like he was trying to, over 27 times. That's how many times he looked it up to try to find. He tried to find the venom, then he tried to find breeders where he could buy the snakes himself. You see how that looks? And then a week later, you buy a tracker to put on his car, and then I know that you're looking at it the night of the murder. And the first thing you did, instead of helping your friend, was run out to the car and take the tracker off? Who does that? You know what I'm saying? In front of a jury, when you look at that, say, what would a reasonable person do? No reasonable person would jump over a dead body or somebody who's dying to go pull something off a car. That would be the last of their worries.
Right.
So that's my question to you. Now, the problem is that now he's bringing you into it.
I have nothing to do with it and know nothing about it. That's what I'm saying.
So you called the insurance the very next day, right?
The next day or 2 days later, I can't remember.
So it was the next day. And do you see how that looks, though?
But my mom could tell you if you talk to her. She started bothering me that next morning. Mm-hmm. She said, Tia, do you have insurance? How are you going to do a funeral or anything? And I said, Mommy, and she could tell you if you call her right now before I can even reach her. I said, Mama, I can't deal with that now. Mm-hmm. I'll worry about that later. I said, I'm overwhelmed with what just happened. Mm-hmm. And so she kept saying it. And matter of fact, it was her, and I'm not sure. It might have been even after George's mom and his sister's.
Why did you
want
to call the insurance that soon, though, the very next day?
That's what I'm saying. My mom is the one that kept telling me I needed to call.
Okay.
She kept, because she knew I didn't have a job. Mm-hmm. She said, how are you going to do a funeral if you don't know if he has a policy? Mm-hmm. And I said, Mama, I'll get to that in a couple of days. I said, right now I'm overwhelmed with what just happened. Mm-hmm. He died on Thursday. This was like Friday. Mm-hmm. when she was, I had several people, like friends, asking me, you know, do you have insurance? Do we need to take up something for funeral? And I said, my mom keeps bugging me, but I haven't called yet. Mm-hmm. So then even Rob, when I talked to Rob, Rob said, do you know if Cuz had insurance? Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't know. Mommy keeps bugging me about calling. So that's when Rob said, well, let me look for the policy with you. We'll call together before I leave. Mm-hmm. Cause, so that wasn't my first reaction. Like I said, you can call my mom right now, and she would tell you.
Okay.
She was the one egging me on that I needed to call because she was worried about funeral expenses. She knows she only gets $1,300 a month. She knows I didn't have a job. So her big thing was, what are we going to do about a funeral with no money? But after I called, she said it was effective. She said, I'm going to email you the papers I need to fill out. You can ask the lady. She emailed them, I think, to me on Friday. I didn't even print them off, I don't think, till like Saturday or Sunday. Mm-hmm. Mommy kept asking me, have you filled the things out? Have you printed them? If you even call the insurance company, I don't think I sent them the stuff till the next week or a week and a half later. Because I wasn't in a rush, because it's like I was too overwhelmed with everything that was going on. Mm-hmm. But yes, I made maybe 3 calls, I think, to Mutual of Omaha since then. Mm-hmm. I stopped calling. They told me about, I don't know, 10, 11, 12 weeks ago, Ms. Young, whenever you're cleared or whatever, we will call, send an email, and mail you something in the mail. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to keep calling. And I haven't called them since, and it's probably been close to 3 months. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, I mean, I don't keep, it's, I just write it out of my head, and I've told numerous people who have said, you know, did you get your life insurance? A lot of people don't know how much it is, mm-hmm. but have you gotten your life insurance? I said, no, you know, it's still an investigation. I told them I haven't even called.
Mm-hmm. You know, and one of the other things is that we get these Crime Stoppers tips.
Yes.
And both of these right here have him listed on it, that people want us to look into him. You see what I'm saying?
So I see what you're saying.
It's one thing after another.
I see what you're saying, but I can tell you I don't know nothing about it.
Okay.
I would never trade my husband's life ever for money. Mm-hmm. And I've made that comment to numerous of family members and friends, and I mean mm-hmm. it. I really mean it. Because that doesn't replace him or my kids having a father.
Correct. So why do you think that Tim's going to be doing something like this?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. This is new to me. None of this makes any sense to me.
So
none of
you
it.
Guys were, so what is he, so what about the part where he says that you and him have been in a relationship for a long time?
We have not. We've been in a very close friendship. He's like, we started off like, I mean, it's like we're brothers. First of all, it was like he was a stranger when he first came, because I haven't seen Tim probably in 15, 20 years since he was young. The longer he was there, because he is very quiet, we became close. Mm-hmm. But I'm not understanding that either. I don't know.
One of the things, I talked to Zena, his ex, and she said that she had found out through him that he was seeing somebody named Tia, and that he had been calling around, and he kept changing up which Tia it was, and then she called you one day when you and George were at a hotel or something like that and confronted you. Do you remember that?
She didn't call me and George. No, okay. She called my job. She called my the job, the hospital that I work at, mm-hmm. and asked me some questions. She asked me, was I Tia? She didn't ask Young. She said Tia. It was another last name she asked me. I can't remember what the girl's name was. And I said, no, but I'm Tia Young. Mm-hmm. And she said, do you know Tim? I said, yeah, Tim lives with us. Mm-hmm. So she said, oh, so you're George's wife. I said, yes, I'm Tia Young. She said, do you know anything about a Tia, whatever the girl? Anyway, the girl worked for DeKalb County. She was mm-hmm. a teacher or a band coach or something, I don't know. So she asked me some questions, and do I know anything about Tim and messing with this girl named Tia who worked for DeKalb? I said, no.
Okay. Do you know a Christy Lewis?
I've heard of Christy. I think it's one of Tim's friends from Mississippi or Alabama.
Okay. Because it looks like, I don't know. He was emailing her back and forth. He said, I apologize for everything. I wish all this could stop, but I feel like I'm going to end up dead over all of this. Sorry for getting you involved.
Yeah, I know Chris. I never met her. I know he has a best friend, close friend named Christy.
Well, they've been talking more than that. They've been talking romantically.
Come here, Christy.
Through the summer of last year.
Okay.
There's another girl named Candy. Do you know Candy?
I've heard of Candace. I think that's a girl. But he had a girlfriend named Candace, I think, that he dated here. But then there's one from Myrtle Beach, I think.
You know she lives in Stone Mountain?
The Candace that I know lives in Georgetown and Myrtle Beach.
This one may have moved.
Could have.
But he was talking to her last summer, too.
Okay. Yeah, like I said, I know he's got an ex named Candace and then a girl from Myrtle Beach who used to kick it with Manny Candace. Mm-hmm. None of these girls I've ever met.
Okay. So, what do you say about the whole him saying you and him have been in a relationship? I know I just asked you that, but why would he just come up with that say that?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I have no idea. Yes, we were close. Like I said, very, very close. And since George has died, we've come a little closer, but I think it's more so because he has, I guess, I mean, my boys really look up to him because my kids, we don't have any family. Mm-hmm. They don't have any uncles. George has one brother that they met for the first time when George died. So they don't have any male figures, so they really look up to him. So now they call him Uncle Tim. My middle son even said to me, and I think I had a text message on my phone a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. that he kind of looks up to Tim almost like a dad figure because we don't have any men in our life, mm-hmm. you know.
In his phone, he had you saved in his phone as Big Sis. You knew about that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. This is your phone, from your phone. Why is he saved under Sonia, under your phone, both of his phones?
That's just what I put under his sister. His older sister name is Sonia.
And why would you do that, though? Unless you, that looks like you're trying to cover up him being in your phone, like you didn't want George or somebody.
Oh, no, there's quite a few people in my phone that I don't have under the actual name.
Okay. So one of the things that, you know, like I told him is that when we took his phones, we could get everything that was done, okay? Mm-hmm. So obviously, I was able to retrieve everything that was off of his phone, okay? And so I have all of these emails that you sent him talking about yours and his sexual relationship. You remember those?
Yes.
Okay.
Much like Tim, Tia took the route of denying her secret relationship. So appropriately, officers gave her the Tim treatment of showing her the sexual texts, which is when you can visibly see her expression change. With this, the pressure on Tia is at an all-time high, and the detective won't let this opportunity slip from his hands as he begins to make Tia realize exactly the kind of situation she's in.
So this is where we're at, Tia. Okay, I want you to listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
I know what's been going on. I know Tim's involvement. I also know there's a lot more that's been going on here, okay? What I want from you now is to understand all of this, because what it looks like is you're this hateful, horrible spouse that connived with your live-in boyfriend to kill your husband for money. If that's how it is, then that's fine. You can tell me that. But if that's not what happened, then this is your only chance to tell me what was really going on.
That's not what happened.
Then tell me this is your only chance to tell me what's really going on, because everything else looks really bad. And I'm telling you right now, if you put all of this in front of a jury without your explanation of it, that's exactly what they're going to think.
I did not have anything to do with George's death.
Okay.
And definitely nothing dealing with him, wanting him dead for money. Nothing. At all.
Okay. So you're willing to let all of that stand in front of a jury?
Yes, as far as having anything to do with his death, yes, I am. I am. Because I know I had nothing to do with it. Nothing.
Okay, but you've been having a relationship with Tim. What has he said to you?
He has never said anything about wanting to hurt George ever or taking over the business. That's why I'm sitting here like, this is new to me. He's never said he wanted to take over Metro Atlanta Security. Mm-hmm. He's never told me he wanted George dead. He never said he was going to try to hurt George.
Mm-hmm.
Never. Not once.
All right. So George got home at 11:23, okay? And he had just gotten off the phone. And when he got off the phone, he came inside, or came to open the door. And that's when people remember hearing the shots around that same time, too, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The 911 call was not placed till 10 minutes later, when you guys called. Now, in that time, I've gone over the story with you multiple times, and you've told me that he opened the door, he saw it was George and all of that. So I can tell you that when I go back and listen to the 911 call, mm-hmm. that it is absolutely 100% completely staged. The things you told the dispatcher, you had already done and already said.
No, I haven't. No, I haven't and I wasn't.
Why not?
Because he told me to call 911 and that's exactly what I did and everything the lady asked me.
And then while you're on the phone with her, he says, oh, there's somebody got shot. And then he says, oh, can you send an ambulance? My brother now says it's my husband that was hit. But you already knew that.
I did. When I made the call, when he told me to call 911, the lady asked me, I said, I heard some shots.
Mm-hmm.
She asked me, I believe she asked me, I think she might have asked me, did I know who it is or whatever. I don't remember. I don't remember all the details. But what I'm saying is, when I called, it was not staged. I called as soon as I heard the shots, went and found Tim. Well, what I thought at first was firecrackers. I wasn't sure what it was. Okay. And went and found Tim. And he checked and told me whatever the time frame was to call 911. That's what I did.
Okay.
I did not stage the conversation or any of that.
Okay. Well, talk to me about this then. How did this happen? How did you guys enter into this relationship while he's living in the house behind George?
I don't remember exactly when it started. I think it was around the time that I thought George was messing with the girl Mariah.
Mm-hmm.
I never had any real proof. I saw something on his tablet at one point, and I questioned him about it. He denied it. He said, you know, he was not sleeping with her. She was just a secretary for him and Rob. Mm-hmm. I didn't have anything to worry about, but I felt like it was more to it than that.
Okay. So you were pursuing this relationship, because even in your emails, it sounds like Tim was trying to cut it off, and you were the one that was continuously talking to him and continuing it, right?
I was hurt about it, yeah, because I found out he was, you know, he had told me he wasn't talking to Zena anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't messing with, you know, anybody else anymore. Just kind of got caught in some lies, and I questioned him about it.
Mm-hmm.
Notice how freely she is talking about their hidden relationship while just minutes ago, she was denying it fervently. Because of this, officers have chalked down her personality profile to being a compulsive liar, something which will bite her in the back when she is brought to trial.
So, you know, these messages were in that phone, okay, the day that we went to go do the search warrant when you called Kim and told her to go get the phone. Is this what you were worried that we were going
to
find?
To be honest, yes.
Well, that's what I want, is honesty.
To be honest, yes, I was.
Okay, because this looks really bad.
To be honest, yes, I was very afraid of that part, yes.
And you've been in this house and you've been living with him, and whether or not you guys are in a relationship, I don't know because I'm not in there anymore, but that's what it looks like. And I know that he's not just living in this house and nothing has been said. So if you know something, I need you to explain it to me and help me, because he's going to implicate you and he can take you down with him. Okay? And I don't think you want that. So that's why I'm telling you, what do you know? What has he said? What is going on?
Nothing as far as the murder of Mr. Smith. Nothing. I don't know that Tim had anything to do with it. He has not opened up, confessed nothing to me. Like I said, we discussed the tracker, I think, once, and that was the night after we left here,
mm-hmm.
when you told me that somebody said they saw him getting it before they helped George or whatever it was. But as far as the case, we don't even discuss it. Like,
mm-hmm.
There's very few times during the week that we even bring it up. I don't even like talking about it to my mom.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to move on as far as me and my youngest child. My older two are doing fine. My youngest one is not. So as far as the case, I don't even talk to him much about the case.
Every time that I've talked to you, it's kind of been a different story about what happened that night. And I understand it can be traumatic, but when things like this happen, people don't forget those kinds of things. So that also makes it look like, because what he told me where he saw you that night and what happened was not true. And what you told me that you saw him, it was always different. I just don't understand that. Okay? Obviously, him going out and getting the tracker and that kind of stuff, it's just not right. The fact that he had $1 million life insurance policy and you called the next day. You one point, you told me that you went to wake up your mom and you were on the catwalk with her. And
no, she was never asleep.
You went to go get your mom and you brought her on the catwalk with you. One time you said you stood out there, you talked to her. That's what I can hear in the 911 call. The time before that, you said you took her into your bedroom and put her in the closet so she wouldn't wake up your kids.
When she started having a breakdown, yeah, I took her in the closet.
She told me that didn't happen.
She told you what? Did she never
breakdown? She told me she never went into your room and went into the closet. This whole gun running thing, okay, I looked into it. You gave me a totally different story than he did. You said it was some Cuban guy named Carlos. He said it was Terrence Bannerman, the pudding guy that you grew up with. I found Terrence. I know that stuff's not true.
The Carlos guy is true.
But why would you tell me Carlos and he brings up some guy? Those are not even related at all.
I have no idea. The only thing I can tell you is about the Hispanic-looking guy that came to the house looking for him. And when I didn't call George right away, I didn't even text him. I waited till he got home that night, and I told him about the guy coming by.
Mm-hmm.
George's eyes got real big. He looked at me, and I asked him, what in the world is this about? Don't worry about it. Just don't worry about it. It's somebody I got some financial help from.
Mm-hmm.
don't worry about it. And then I said, George, you need to tell me, because this guy said he means business. Is this something, are you into something that would jeopardize us? What's going on? And he just said something to the fact, he said, I'm just running weapons or delivering weapons or something like that. He said, but you don't need to worry about it.
And so then every time after that, when I asked you, is there any reason anybody would want to hurt him, you never mentioned it until we brought it up to you.
Yeah, that night when he was killed, I didn't think of it.
Why would you not think about somebody coming to your house, asking for money, looking for your husband, talking about running guns?
But it was 2 or 3 months before that. I didn't think of it at all.
Okay. How come that most of the messages and phone calls from you and Tim are deleted in your phone, but they're all in his?
I mean, what are you talking about? The phones you have?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would delete them. I would periodically delete them.
Okay.
There's even another coworker that I talked to that I would delete the calls from.
All right. And that night, you gave your middle son the Unisom, correct?
Yeah, but I give him, I mean, he gets that a couple times.
He had before, but when we spoke to him, he said he hadn't gotten it in a long time, and that was the very first night he'd gotten it in a long time, in over a month.
It'd probably been a couple of weeks, I guess.
You see what I'm saying, though? That night, the night that he normally goes out in the middle of the night between 9 and midnight is the night your husband comes home at 11 p.m. and gets killed. That makes it look like you gave it to him so that he wouldn't wake up during that time period. And it's also weird that we're there, the ambulance comes, the police come, we walked in their rooms and went everywhere, and none of them woke up in any of that.
But I asked. Me and my mom both asked everybody that came in the house. My mom, she was the first one that started asking, please be quiet. My grandchildren are asleep. My daughter doesn't want the kids to wake up.
I know, but the ambulance and everybody coming in and out, and they never, none of them ever woke up.
But
that's the first time he got that pill? You see what I mean?
It's not the first time he had it. That's what I'm saying.
In a while.
It had been a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But I don't give it to the oldest one, and I don't give it to the baby. Well, I've had to start giving it to the youngest one now to be able to get some sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Either Benadryl, I'll give him Benadryl, or either a Unisom. He doesn't get it every night, but he can't sleep since George died.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, my middle son is the only one that will walk and pace the house 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and then don't want to get up for school the next day.
Mm-hmm.
My oldest one, I don't think I've ever had to give him anything for sleep. But he slept through everything because we were quiet. We asked the police would they be quiet as much as possible. When some guy came around, he had to take pictures of the rooms. I asked him, was there any way he could not go in that room where the boys
were? But why was that your concern? Even on the 911 call, you tell them, don't come, lights and sirens. Your husband is laying out on the front porch dying, and you're worried about the kids waking up?
I didn't want my kids to see my husband bleeding to death on the front porch, Mr. Smith.
I understand that to an extent, but I just think you would be worried about him and not, I mean, your kids are going to find out.
I wanted her to send help, but I didn't want her to just... If my kids had saw their dad laying in the front doors dead, I didn't want them to have that picture in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like any mom would have done, just like my mom did it for me when my dad committed suicide in 07. I was upstairs asleep. He hung himself in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
She let me sleep upstairs and did not wake me up until she was hoping he would be removed from the basement before they woke me up. But I ended up waking up on my own because of the commotion.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the same thing my mom did for me, and I was a grown woman, but she didn't want me to wake up and see my dad hanging in the basement. And I was in my 30s when he died.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, Tia. It doesn't look good. And I'm telling you right now that I have no reason to lie to you, because I have all this information to go in there, that I went in there and talked to him, and I just went in there with him. I didn't come in here and sit down and talk to him like I did you. I went in there and laid all of this out in front of him. And that's what he told me.
Well, I don't know why he would.
So why would he do that?
I don't know. I guess if he feels like he's going down, maybe he's just going to try to take me with him. I don't know. I would never imagine him doing that, but that's the only thing I can figure. Because he's never said one thing about one. Matter of fact, it's hard for me to believe Tim even said that. I'm not calling you a liar, but mm-hmm. What I'm saying is, he knew, just like Rob knows, the only people who didn't know was George's family, that when George died, this company died. When he died, his alarm license dies with it. Nobody can run Metro Atlanta Security once George dies.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Because Ivy thought that was her big thing. Me and my brothers and sisters, we're going to keep the business going. I said, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
When your brother passed away, he said that years ago. That's why he wanted Tim, hopefully that Tim and David would one day maybe get their license, so they could help run, you know, they could equally run the company. But when George died, the company died.
Mm-hmm.
We all knew that. So it's like, that's what I'm saying. How would I, it's hard for me to believe he would say that he wanted to take over the business.
Oh, he said it, trust me. And then right here, he's talking to David. The day before he bought the tracker, he says, David says, we need to get a spot. And Tim says, you think? And then Tim says, I got to end this mess first. And then David says, yep, you definitely do. And then the very next day, he buys the tracker.
Well, I know that he even knows the company can't be ran because neither one of them have an alarm license.
Okay, but what about the $1 million life insurance policy and you guys being in a relationship, all of that stuff together?
Mr. Smith, I don't never get the million. I could care less. And I voiced that to my mom, my aunts. George's mom can tell you. Mm-hmm. She can tell you. I've been saying it for the past 2 or 3 months because she's worried about it. When are you going to get paid? What are you going to do with the kid? How are you going to? I said, Margie, I'm to the point I don't give a shit if I don't ever get the money. I'm just tired of all the stress. I just want to move on this grief, dealing with BJ, dealing with all the things I'm dealing with. I don't give two shits about the money if I don't ever get it. I know how to work. That's what I've been doing the past 2 or 3 years, working $15,000, $20,000 of overtime a year. Mm-hmm. I know how to work. So if I don't get it, it's fine. That's why if you call me Jamal, they can tell you. I ain't called in months. Mm-hmm. I don't care anymore. So the money is not an issue for me. I mean, yes, I need money. And we all do need money to live. But if I don't ever get it, that's fine. Matter of fact, I even have the courts gave me, I got his probate, whatever you call it, executive estate mm-hmm. paperwork. I think it was like January 25th, maybe. I've only been to one bank to see if there was money in it, and that was Regent. And I knew that's where his paycheck went, his last paycheck went. Mm-hmm. But well, I think he has a Wells Fargo account. I think he has a Bank of America account. I haven't been to any of them banks with the statements to try to see what's in them, to see if I could get it. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Even my mom keeps saying, Tia, with the way money is tight around here, why don't you go to those banks and see what he has? It might be something to help this household. Mm-hmm. I still haven't been. So money, that's what I'm saying, to make this out like I'm doing it for money. Or it was, it's done for
I'm
money.
Not, I'm telling you that's what it looks like, and that's what he's telling me.
Well, that's some bull. I can tell you that. That's some bull. Yes, I will admit, and I apologize for lying. I am very embarrassed about this. I really am. Mm-hmm. I am.
And you guys are still in a relationship now?
Yes, to be honest, yes. I'm just going to be honest.
Well,
yes.
That's what I want, because listen, Tia, I'm telling you this is how it looks, and I keep telling you this. He's going to try to take you down with him. And I'm telling you, when he gets up there and he starts talking about everything and what you did and what you did, and you don't have anything to counter that, and you don't have a way to say, no, that's BS because this is actually what happened, or this is what he told me, or this is... That's right there is going to be a huge issue. You see what I'm saying? Are you ready to go to jail today for this?
No, because I know I'm guilty of this,
then
and
tell
this is
me.
Wrong.
Then tell
this
me, there's no way he's been living under your roof and you've been in a relationship and you don't know that something was happening.
As far as all this, you're talking about hurting George or having a sexual... No, that part I don't.
Tia, that part I don't. Way.
That part I don't. The second part, the affair, I'm very, very embarrassed. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how embarrassed I am. I really am. I'm sorry that
so
I never told
you. So much
that
you continued it past your husband dying?
The first 2 months we did, it started back up around the 1st of March. The first couple of months we did. We called it up. We just stopped because I'm going to tell you the truth. I was afraid that my boys would end up picking up on something is wrong mm-hmm. or catching us kissing or something. So we both said the boys have been through enough and I didn't want to chance them seeing anything inappropriate to send them off because I'm sure it would hurt them deeply that I'm talking to Tim and Daddy's just not too long ago died. So I think it might have been like the middle of February or 1st of March when we kind of gotten talk, you know, kind of get romantic again. But up until then, no.
Okay. So you don't know anything about
nothing it. About the crime. I do not know nothing. I have no explanation for that. None. And if, like I said, I can give you a list of people you can call before I even have access to my phone. They will tell you Kim Drayton, Candace Hoover, Trina. I can name 4 or 5 that I've told over the past few months. I don't give a shit if I don't ever get the money. Mm-hmm. It ain't about, and a lot of them don't know how much it is, but mm-hmm. they know I have a life insurance policy. And I told them, I just want this stress to be over. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of the stress. The money, I could care less. And like I said, my mom will tell you right now, she's pissed because I won't go to Wells Fargo and Bank of America to see what money's in there and take it out. Because she said, Tia, we need it to live. Mm-hmm. I told her I don't want to deal with nothing. When I get depressed, I deal with depression anyway.
Tia was so depressed that she called her dead husband's insurance company to claim $1 million 1 day after he died. Clearly, she had no kind of solid alibi or defense for all the evidence stacked against her, which is why the detective leaves and returns a short while later to break the news to her.
Hey, Tia.
Hey.
All right, listen. I went and talked to Tim some more, okay? Obviously, his story's not changing, okay? He's implicating you, and he's bringing you into this and all that kind of stuff, okay? So, unfortunately, you are going to have to go to jail tonight, okay?
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Can
I call my mom?
Well, let me ask them and see what they want to do, and I'll let you know right quick, okay?
Okay.
Just wait right here for a second.
All right, Tia, if you could stand up for me, please.
Okay.
Turn and face the wall.
Okay.
If you want to take off your visitor pass.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You don't have anything in your pockets, do you?
My keys.
Your keys?
Okay.
Where's your cell phone?
It's in the car.
In the car? Okay.
All right.
If you want to just put your hands on the wall.
That's fine.
I don't know much about what's going on, okay, but I know if you have anything on you
mm-hmm.
that could be deemed a weapon or anything like that,
okay.
You could get in more trouble.
Yeah.
Okay, you don't have anything on you?
No.
Not even like a dime bag weed or nothing like that?
No.
Okay. Separate your feet for me.
Okay.
Okay. Do you want to put your hands behind your back? Over your? Yeah. I will get you a bag and put all your property in it.
After Tim and Tia were arrested, many believed that the real ones to suffer in this situation were the children, who neither had a mother or father, nor would they receive the $1 million from the insurance as the beneficiary's trial had to conclude first. There were fears it would take years before the children had money to live off. Fortunately, a GoFundMe was set up to support the children, and just 2 years later, George's killers were brought to justice. On April 15, 2019, Tim was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole, as they were found guilty of malice murder, felony murder, and aggravated assault. As for Tia, she was found guilty of the same charges, with an additional charge of tampering with evidence. Consequently, she was given life in prison with the possibility of parole.